This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show, which is brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn about their products and services. And we thank them for partnering with the Tech Central Show to bring you these great interviews. Now, we're talking retail with Pick and Pay today, and I think it's fair to say that the on-demand grocery delivery business in South Africa has exploded onto the scene since COVID, and in the past year or two has become super competitive. I think it's also fair to say that Pick and Pay perhaps wasn't as fussed out of the starting gates during COVID than some of its competitors, notably a certain retailer headquartered in Brackenfell. But Pick and Pay has faced some big challenges in recent years across its business and is now in a major turnaround being led by veteran CEO Sean Summers. In this context, I'm excited for today's discussion with Enrico Ferrigalli. Enrico is executive head of online at Pick and Pay. Enrico, thank you for coming into the studio. It's great to see you.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm honored.
Enrico, I beg your pardon, you co-founded the app Bottles about
yeah,
a decade ago now.
Yes.
And that, of course, was bought out by Pick and Pay. But tell us a bit about your career journey. How did you get into the retail space?
Absolutely. I'm Italian, as you can tell. I've been in South Africa for the last 13 years. And loved every bit of
it. What brought you here?
Initially, I was working for Unilever in Italy, mm-hmm. and I really wanted to go somewhere else. And they offered me five options, and one of those was South Africa. Mm-hmm. And what I was really looking for in that move was to be part of a big socio-economical shift. It's something big from a cultural and societal, you know, perspective. And you know, you don't get it in Dubai, you don't get it in Canada, you don't get it in the UK. South Africa felt like it was going to give me something unique, and it certainly has. And that's why, you know, this was a 2 years assignment that turned into 13 years stays, two kids born here that speak in English that I will never speak. So it's exciting to be here, feel part of this society. It's a beautiful place to be.
Okay, so how did you go from Unilever to a startup?
Yeah, so after a few years at Unilever, I really got really passionate about digital, mm-hmm. first in digital advertising, and then really conceptualized the idea that I felt that it was really hard for people to buy liquor through a bottle store. That is such a complicated journey. You have to go through a different store from your grocery store, which doesn't happen in Europe, right? Mm. Which was my upbringing. It's a different teller. It's a different experience. Not all bottle stores are nice. They regulate in a different way. They always feel, you know, often a bit dingy. Mm. And me and Vince, you know, we're sitting around the table at a braai, and we're like, why isn't there a way to get it delivered? At that time, Mr. D was a piece of paper on your fridge. You had to call in to order. Uber Eats would only launch, I think, the following year in the US. But at the same time, we saw this initial shift of, you know, Uber coming online, and the world seemed ready for an app with a Google Maps integration with mm-hmm. one-click payments. And we're like, let's do this, right?
It's easy to forget that this was only 10 years ago that this stuff was being developed. It feels like it's been with us forever.
Absolutely. 10 years ago, Google Maps, literally 10 years ago, Google Maps started offering that API integration to a third-party app. It was free. Mm-hmm. Now it's not free, I can tell you that.
They have to make money somehow, right?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I'm not judging.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a different era, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so you built Bottles with your partner. Who did you start the business with?
His name is Vincent Viviers.
Vincent, okay.
Yes, he was a friend from Unilever, and we've been working together since.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Okay, and so what were your learnings with Bottles? You got the app out the gate. What was your initial... what was the initial market reaction, and what were your learnings?
Yeah, the beauty of this, the first thing that I think we did right was actually develop an app that worked. Because mm-hmm. this is, again, as you said earlier, this is 2015. Mm-hmm. A plethora of app and people were building apps that just didn't work. They didn't work because the technology was so rough. And I felt that we had to teach the developers how to develop apps, and we were marketers, right? Mm-hmm. We weren't necessarily app developers, but we understood the consumer journey, the experience, and what are the steps to get from, you know, from signing up an account to placing an order. So that, I think, was the first thing. This was also an era where there were no delivery drivers at every traffic light, right? So, believe it or not, we did our first, we got up to 5,000 orders every month, doing it manually with Ubers. Mm-hmm. We had 30 phones, and we were putting the pickup point at the bottle store and the delivery address to the customer. Then we were calling the Uber and say, I'm not there, go to the bottle store, order 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, get it and deliver it, right? So definitely taught us the basics of tech, taught us the basics of logistics, which is a big piece of what we do today, is a big enabler, and store operation. And it's also, I think, where I fell in love with retail. Mm-hmm. And it was another part. I enjoyed marketing, and I enjoyed being in a marketing, like Unilever. It taught me everything I know today. But it's also like always felt like it's just deodorant. Mm-hmm. It's just... how's okay? And I wanted something more meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when did the relationship with Pick and Pay start? Was it, were you using Pick and Pay liquor stores to do the...
So not at first. Mm-hmm. So at first we were using independent liquor stores. And after about a year, we realized that if we really wanted to scale, we really needed some core component that you need to give a proper customer experience. And it's really, you need a stock feed of information from a store. You need a pricing feed from the store so that you can consistently deliver, you know, a good experience to the customer. And the only way of doing it was to go to someone that had the underlying technology that could tell you, in this store, there are 17 bottles of this product and this is the price. Mm-hmm. And we one of our early investors in bottles, Solly Kramer, entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic entrepreneur. One of our mentors, really. And one of the best entrepreneurs in this country, as far as I believe. He introduced us to Pick and Pay. Mm-hmm. And it felt the right cultural fit. We met the others too, but there was something about the culture and the values and the way that, you know, you could work with Pick and Pay that was unique. So we did what then SAP told us was one of the first things, the first time they've ever seen this, which is integrating a third-party app in SAP ERP. And by doing that, we would be able to know at each store twice a day the stock on hand of each product and its price, which from a customer experience perspective is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We were delivering about 98% of what you ordered, which is unheard of, mm-hmm. right? And the pricing was in-store pricing at Pick and Pay. It was a really good good experience. And from there, we went from 4 stores to 57, and then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And in a matter of days, we first had the most exciting business because you couldn't go to the bottle store, and then liquor was banned. Mm. And we had at the time 40 employees, and we had no business. One of our competitors had just launched the grocery app, so you know there was a communion of intent between us and Pick and Pay, say, you know what, we're going to pivot bottles to grocery. Mm-hmm. We did that in 3 days. Oh, so wow. In 3 days, we literally took down all the liquor and manually listed, I think at the time it was 2,500 products. But as manual as go and look for the picture of the avocado, download it from Google, put it on our back end, type, you know, 2 avocados, Pick and Pay, and save it. On the Monday, in stage 5 lockdown, I actually can't remember those stages anymore, right?
It's a bad memory.
Yeah, it's a bad memory, exactly. we started with 2 stores, and on the Thursday we had 57 stores all trained online. You couldn't go in the store. It was a really tough time for the country, and it just grew.
Mm-hmm.
In March, the last month of bottles, we were doing 12,000 orders a month.
Mm-hmm.
In April, we did 36,000, and it just there it just exploded.
So did bottles then become Pick and Pay ASAP?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it was a rebranding of the bottle.
It was first
there.
Rebranded, and then we embarked on a journey that we actually concluding in its first kind of iteration now with the launch of our new app, which is now fully integrated into the bigger ecosystem of Pick and Pay. You're a smart shopper, you can earn and burn smart shopper points. It's really a unified experience.
Was there a lot of work that had to happen at the back end? You mentioned the SAP ERP system that Pick and Pay was running and the integration work you did with that. But subsequent, I mean, this has obviously become a much more complex and dynamic operation. How much back-end work have you done over the last few years to make sure that this is a much smoother experience for consumers?
A lot more than people think. I think it's because people only see the front-end app for customers. They think that that's the big part. It isn't, right? It's probably like 20%. And you also, you try to make it as stupid as possible. You don't want business logic to sit on the app. You want it to sit on your back end because it's faster, it's not customer facing. So a lot. I often, you know, when I talk to other people in the industry and I tell them like, what's our AWS monthly cost? They go like, what? And it's because it's not one system. It's several systems, right? There's a front-end app. There's a back-end infrastructure that manages everything from marketing to merchandising to the stores. There's also a picking app in the store.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a driver app. So it's a very large tech infrastructure.
Built all around SAP?
Built all around, in part, yes. Mm-hmm. So some parts where I think SAP does really well, it's a stable, it's structured, you can build on it relatively easily. So some parts like the e-commerce, central e-commerce engine is a part of SAP. Other parts, we believe that other technologies are better suited for it. So, yeah.
Okay. So it's a mishmash of the best
of breed
tech.
Yes, absolutely.
In the back end. So I mean, it's interesting that we're a tech show. If we're talking to retailers, we find ourselves talking to retailers more and more and more. How important is technology to a modern retail operation?
It's everything, and it's really one of the reasons why I enjoy what I do right now is that I cannot find another industry where right now it's so impacted by technology. And we, of course, we talk about this every day, and it's not just online ordering.
Mm.
It's implementation of AI in our supply chain forecasting models to a completely different level, right? To a completely different level of complexity. So it's absolutely critical. It's critical for the way we buy. It's critical for the pricing we show customers is critical for the supply chain. It has become absolutely central to what we do, and it's one of the reasons why you'd think an entrepreneur just want to get through the 2 or 3 years he has to get through and then leave. And I just love the industry. I just love the values of the business. I love what I could do, and I could impact the digital transformation journey of Pick and Pay to the point that Vince, my co-founder, actually moved to a digital transformation role, and that's the core of his job because it is absolutely central to everything we do. We have large set of data, large set of product. It's a really large enterprise to run, and you've got to implement a lot of technology around it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned AI, so let's spend a moment on that. There's a lot of interesting stuff. Of course, we've just had the launch of ChatGPT-5, but there's a lot of talk about AI agents going forward and having personal AI assistants that help you with your day-to-day. Where do you see on-demand grocery delivery going in that context? I mean, are we going to have personal AI shoppers for us, that'll know when we're out of milk and automatic reorder or ask us if we'd like to reorder and just have stuff arrive on demand? Is that the kind of world we're going into, and what work is Pick and Pay doing in that regard?
No, absolutely. So AI is such a broad and exciting topic. I think it as a start, I think it AI became kind of a buzzword about, I don't know, maybe 18 months ago. The reality is that we probably started implementing AI 4 years ago, five mm-hmm. years ago, right? First, from a dev perspective, developing code AI is phenomenal, right? So I think about 4 or 5 years ago were the first implementation of certain form of copilot between, you know, the AI and a developer, and has grown massively, and it's kind of just the way it works today, mm-hmm. right? So it's not even something that we implemented. It's something that we've implemented 3 years ago. And the exciting part has been over the last 2 to 3 years to really implement AI to utilize data in a better way to make your shopping experience better, right? So we first implemented it in search. I think it was back in 2022. And it's just a different level of quality, right? Now you're searching for bananas. It's not bananas as let's search for the string term. Is the last banana that Duncan bought is the first one that shows, mm-hmm. right? And because it seems that between different categories you like banana flavor, the next thing I'm going to recommend to you is a new banana product that I have. Mm-hmm. And this is fundamentally change the way we shop online. I think in the first iterations of online, there was almost this discussion about how do you replicate the in-store experience? You will never be the same as the in-store experience. You can't touch the product. Mm. And that's good. It's not the same. It's different. It's a place where you can find the best recommendations, where we can really help you shop online shopping assistants, a search that really works, but also a range of recommendations to make your shopping easier, to help you discover new product. Because the reality is that this is not just about selling more products to you. This is about making your shopping experience more nicer, mm-hmm. right? It's tailored to you, and that's really one of the key pillars of that we focus on from a strategy mm-hmm. perspective is hyper personalization. Yeah. You will come into our app over the next weeks and months, and you'll feel like this is your app, mm-hmm. and your app will look different from mine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a very exciting place.
I'm very much looking forward to the time because I personally hate shopping, and if I had an AI agent that did it for me, I'd be very happy. And I look forward to the era where I can open my fridge, take a photograph, open my pantry, take a photograph, and it'll say, looks like you're out of this, 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 and this. Would you like me to order for them for you? An hour later, it arrives at my door.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's also the other interesting question that comes from it is, how do you now reshape the in-store experience, which will still be 60, 50, mm-hmm. at least 50 or 60%, you know, if you project 10 years forward, you'll still be there and it'll be critical. But how beautiful can that store experience be the moment you can focus on the things that you want to come in store for? Mm-hmm. Take the flour out, take the sugar out. You want sugar? Take a picture of your pantry. We'll, you know, you go through sugar in 3 weeks. We'll have sugar for you delivered the day it runs out, right? Not too early, not too late. Easy over time with the data. But the other exciting part is how beautiful can the shopping experience be in store then?
So you'll make so e-commerce is actually going to make the in-store experience perhaps more an experiential thing.
Absolutely.
Where you don't go, you're not going there to buy the specific things, but you're going there because you want to see things that you perhaps
that's how I see it, yeah. Right? You can double the size of a baker, you can double the size of a butcher, you can have store attendants that can give you the experience that you can have in a independent butchery, because you don't have to stack rows of bread, because that just come to you. We know you need that. Mm-hmm. So I think for a very long time we were like, online is disrupting the stores. I actually hate the word disruption. Mm-hmm. I think it's evolution is the right word. We are evolving as two parts that are critical to the customer, because that's the only thing that matters. The customer wants it, and we must serve our customers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Of course, this is a very competitive market. There are a lot of retailers in South Africa that are getting into the on-demand delivery game, some doing better than others. How do you convince your average online shopper out there to shop with Pick and Pay and not with one of the others? How do you ensure Pick and Pay stands out?
Absolutely. So a few things, right? So of course you need that underlying layer of the products we sell and the ranges we have, and our commercial team is just phenomenal at that, right? So when Sean came back, he brought back a few of the people that he worked with that were working in different roles, primarily in Africa. And let me tell you, I sit in board with them every second week, and I've been learning so much from them. So the first layer has to be, you know, the best fresh product, the best butchery items, and that's the core. How do we then build on that? It's by making your shopping experience online as seamless as possible, right? You need to have easy access to the product that you usually buy. You need to have a search functionality that really gets the product that you're looking for. You need to have a level of content management on your app that continuously refreshes what we do. And that's another part that I'm very excited about. The new app we launch is a fully native app. And it's most of the apps are built in some form of bridging technology. And only the big apps, the real powerful app, are built in native language. And when you do that, you can change how it looks without having to release new versions, right? So which means that you can, you know, on Saturdays when the Springboks are playing, and us being the sponsor of the Springbok, it just becomes a Springbok app.
Mm-hmm.
And so it keeps the excitement. It's personalized. The experience is good. We deliver in 60 minutes. We focus every single day on world-class operations. Because mm-hmm. ultimately, that's retail, right? So on top of the tech, I manage the end-to-end experience. So the pickers, the drivers, and the customer service. And the way we attract and retain our customers is, of course, first through convenience. But now it becomes through, this is a different way for you to shop that mm-hmm. is highly personalized. We understand your needs. And we'll make it really pleasant for you.
Mm-hmm. It sounds though that this stuff is becoming not so much a competitive differentiator, but a ticket to ride, that you have to do this on-demand delivery stuff and you have to get it right if you want to play as a retailer.
Absolutely. I mean, look, the beauty of retail, why I love retail so much, is that it's one of the few industries that is actually serving the customers.
Mm-hmm.
You open in lockdown level 5. You open when there is a whatever happened in Durban a few years ago. We're there. We serve. We are customer centric, right? And we're doing a lot of work. And Sean is doing a lot of work to return Pick and Pay to be fully customer centric. We certainly strive to be every single day. And I don't think it's a choice. The customer chooses, and we. And we serve.
Mm-hmm.
So
have to be the best at doing that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Otherwise, they go somewhere else.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. The other beauty of retail, though, is that, you know, when you buy a watch or you buy shoes, right? You mm-hmm. choose that every 6 months,
mm-hmm.
right? So every 6 months you have an opportunity to switch. In retail, you have an opportunity to make people switch twice a week,
mm-hmm.
right? And the good side is that you can continuously work to be the best version of yourself to convert customers, right? You have a good price, people will come in store, they see that your experience has improved, your experience has changed, that the shop looked good, they'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, you're only as good as the last delivery, right? So it mm-hmm. needs to be perfect yes, every time.
Every time, yeah, yeah. But how do you convince someone who's using a competitor's on-demand delivery app, they're happy with it, Why should they try Pick and Pay?
Yeah, so again, the first layer is the product and promotions we sell, right? And
so price,
not price. So for example, we've been working with the Fresh team very closely over the last couple of months. They launched a campaign called Pick and Pay Every Day, right? Mm-hmm. So every day they have a different subsection of the Fresh that is curated, tailored at a good price. And we've seen that people are coming back, and people that were not previously shopping, they're coming because we're doing two pizza for 100 Rand on Thursday to Sunday. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal deal. Or Burger Friday, we do four burgers, all the preparation items for it, for 100 Rand. Great opportunities. And so it's promotions, this campaign. And actually, this is one thing that I'm quite proud about, is that I think for the last couple of years, the struggle was that we weren't setting the agenda in the retail industry. And we launched a few of these campaigns, pizza, Burger Fridays, booty Saturdays, and two chickens on a Sunday. And everyone else copied. And it felt good. It felt like, yes, we're setting the agenda. And this is how the retail industry works, right?
Yeah.
On your question on competition, the reality is that competition is a form of inspiration, right? Mm-hmm. We are blessed in South Africa with world-class retailers. When you go to the UK, after 2 weeks, you're like, can I be done with this and go back to a place where retail feels better? That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I think competition is good, and it's something that continues to drive and inspire us. The other layer to driving adoption, it's of course a big in-store element, and it's a big both communication in the stores and communication through our flagship loyalty program. We have a very large loyalty program. We're the only one that gives points in grocery. People love it, and we are building. We are really building Smart Shopper within ASAP. They're one and the same. The app is actually a ASAP and Smart Shopper now, because it creates this this connection point, and it's very important for customer. The last part is partnerships. We have a fantastic partnership with F&B. You get up to 30% back in eBucks if you shop at Pick and Pay. Great customer driver, mm-hmm. right? People have been...
You took that from your rival, in fact, that partnership. I'd love to know how that happened.
So F&B, great mm-hmm. partnership, and a lot of other partners. Mr. D is another one, right?
Well, I want to ask about Takealot.
Yes.
What exactly is your relationship with Takealot? Is it effectively a competitor to ASAP? Do you work together? How does it actually function, and why did you form the partnership with Takealot in the first place?
Back in 2022, we saw the opportunity of expanding our reach as a brand
mm-hmm.
In what effectively is simply another digital mall, right, which is Mr. Delivery. And we had a few meetings and a few chats with them, and it felt that we were aligned in terms of our intent. And we created another... what I think it's almost like a world first of a big retailer being within the app of a food aggregator with a full range at in-store prices, offering a 60 minutes on-demand service. It's happening around the world now, right? I think it's Tesco and Deliveroo. It's Marks and Spencer and Food Panda. There's a lot of them. I still don't think that they getting right the element of it's not just the fastest that it can be, is my entire range. And I think that's actually I think that in South Africa, we got to that perfect balance between speed and all the other elements. So the quick commerce, 15, 30 minutes, you don't need your cauliflower in 15 or 30 minutes. You need the full range of Pick and Pay in 60.
Mm-hmm.
In 60, we can do it as a retailer with, you know, profitably, right? In a way that we can do it. 15, 30 minutes is wildly unprofitable. So we actually are setting the agenda in around the world. Even if you look at... online penetration around the world. And I was looking at this number. This is really recent numbers, right? And I wrote them down. So 4-6% penetration of online in grocery. It's South Africa, Canada, France, Sweden, right? So total. The four of us are in that bracket of 4 to 6% of grocery sales are in online. We are at the level of evolved markets. Mm-hmm. And one layer up, 7 to 10% of grocery sales are online, is UK, Australia, Japan, and the US. And I can tell you for a fact that all of the big three that you think about, right, us and the other two, we all already in the US type of section. So
okay, I was going to ask if there are learnings you can get from the US market specifically, where you have these big e-commerce giants. I mean, are we that cutting edge here in South Africa that maybe those markets are learning from us, or are there things we can learn from the likes of Amazon, etc. in terms of
I think there's two elements to this. Mm-hmm. I think it from a operational perspective, as I was saying, I think it they have historically had a primarily click and collect business. Mm. When Walmart launched online, they decided to go click and collect because at that time, you know, there was no Google Maps, there was no apps, and then I think it's probably 50 or 60% of sales of online in grocery are still click and collect.
Okay.
So I think that they have a lot to learn from us on how to enable a 60-minute network, which is where they're going. Mm. Where the technology and the element of that we discussed earlier, personalization, subscriptions, and all of those, then we have a lot to learn. We have a lot to learn from them. Data, I think they have a very developed data science infrastructure that really drives and powers what they do. And I think the last piece that is another big trend that has been there for the last few years is what we call retail media. So through our especially through our loyalty program, we have access to what we call first party data, right? So we know who you are, as opposed to just someone that swipes at the till, that we don't know who that person is, right? So now with first party data, we have the ability to help our suppliers get into the right baskets. And that's a big opportunity for retailers around the world. And it helps to drive the profitability of online as a business.
Okay. Do you do all of your sales online through existing stores, or are you looking at, have you opened any dark stores or any warehouses where you deliver from? And is that part of Pick and Pay's future?
So funny enough, when I joined Pick and Pay, we had two dark stores in Pick and Pay. Mm-hmm. And I think at that time it was probably a little bit too early. And the dark stores were a little bit too big and decentralized.
Okay.
So the reality, and that's probably another learning that we can give to the Walmart. And, you know, if you look at Kroger in the US, they invested very heavily in dark store automation in Ocado. They are undoing it because they realize, you know what? I have a store. And the store is already, I already pay rental. I already pay electricity. How about I use the store to pick my online orders, right? So I think that stores are there to stay as a fulfillment model. I think that dark stores are useful in a few instances, either in a case where you have a large customer base, but you don't have the store presence, right? Maybe, you know, you have a store that is not yet built. You don't have enough stores. You have too many orders. I think that's helpful. And in certain situations where your stores are too small to cater for, you know, what can quickly become 10, 20, 30 pickers an hour, right? Mm-hmm. So there is a place for dark stores. But I think it's not just a one-way street.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. It'd be remiss of me not to ask about your MVNO. You've recently relaunched that, actually, redesigned app, et cetera, et cetera. Why does Pick and Pay feel a need to offer a mobile service? And how does it help in your grocery business?
Yeah, absolutely. So Vince actually runs the MVNO. Look, I think that the reality is that we have a large customer base that shop with us every day, and MVNO is connects really well with our loyalty program mm-hmm. to create a unique proposition, and the launch campaign is actually you get data back with your grocery purchase. So the creation of an ecosystem becomes critical to your to this journey of creating a sticky experience or a sticky brand, right? So we felt that MVNO was another critical piece of creating an ecosystem that it's a pick and pay ecosystem. A lot of people also, that's where they buy the airtime, the data, that's where they interact with the category.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's why we decided to relaunch it, and further down the line we'll bring it into our app that becomes even there it becomes an online ecosystem where you can interact with MVNO, with Smart Shopper, with okay. grocery.
So it helps course. With customer stickiness. It helps Absolutely. With customers coming back because yes. they know they're going to get data on
yeah.
this.
Some, yeah, and you can do some really clever campaigns and promotion that are tied to data, Smart Shopper points, grocery purchases, mm. other purchases. Again, it gives you another layer of behavior that you can base your loyalty program on.
I mean, with the amount of data that you have through your Smart Shopper program, you must be in a very strong position to be able to offer very customized offers to your shoppers, right down to the individual. You know what he buys, you know what he likes, you know how he uses his phone.
Absolutely.
And really target offers that are quite specific to the individual.
Yes, yes. It's something that we already have in the app. So there's a section where you have vouchers that are just for you, mm-hmm. right? My vouchers, your vouchers are different. There's some incredible deals. I buy a lot of kiwi and I get R6 off almost ongoing, right? Because that's something I buy.
Mm.
And we do that. And in the next month, I think you're going to be able to also load that voucher on the app directly and not only install. So again, that's an AI implementation, yeah, if you like, right? Yeah. There's a machine learning algorithm that churns that level of data. And that's just the start.
Mm-hmm.
I think the easy part is to give you good deals on the things you already buy.
Mm-hmm.
Now the next level is the things that you don't know yet, but that you wish that we told you that we just launched this thing, you really love it.
Mm.
Instead of like just hearing it at a bride that, hey, have you tried this? It's phenomenal. Mm.
We all know that retailers have for decades positioned products in the stores deliberately so that they know, you know, I think there's a famous example, Walmart, I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, that they put the beer next to the nappies because they know that the men go in to buy the nappies because they've been asked and they usually pick up a six-pack of beer at the same time. I presume a similar idea can apply online because you know so much about that customer. Go online, you know he's coming in because he likes his kiwis, but you know he also buys these other things. So advertise those to him as well in the online store, and you're likely to notch up additional sales.
Yes.
How important is that level of hyper personalization going to be in retail going forward?
It's everything for me. It's mm-hmm. It's the reason why the online shopping experience becomes something that live on its own and is not trying to replicate the in-store experience. It's giving you something else and something different that is unique, right? It's really this shift from initially people started ordering online grocery for convenience. And as we get more data, we can actually give you a personalized, really high performance experience that where all your like day to day, you can shop them really quickly. So if you have 5 or 10 minutes to spend on our app, you do all of your daily shopping in 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and you have 8 minutes to just be, you know, to be wowed about the things we have. If you go through the app, you'll find a lot of what we call carousels, so horizontal scrolling elements, and they're not just fruit and veg. Mm. They have a you know, like a little marketing concept. You know, it's, you know, you're maybe outdated by your load shedding needs, or game snacks. There's a little something around it, and or what we call occasions that are a bit, you know, bigger. That again, it's an area that is tailored to you and tailored to the occasion, mm-hmm. of a braai, of Christmas, of whatever that is, and that makes shopping really enjoyable. If you think about it, in the store, you lay out the aisles one way, and you can't do it in any other way.
Mm-hmm.
We constantly create new version of the same aisles, right? You can shop by aisle, but you'll be surprised how many customers shop by mission, by occasion, because it's just so much more relevant. I have people coming for a braai, and what I need sits in very different places in online or offline store, but I need, you know, brandy coke, snacks, booty rolls, and bread. And they're all there. They all like top items, and you just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 done. That's where we are, not where we're going, which is exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of where you're going, you're primarily focused on grocery for now, but this is online. You've got warehouses, you've got distribution centers. Do you see an opportunity to compete more broadly with the likes of Takealot, with the likes of Amazon in broader category products? I know you have a clothing chain in Pick and Pay Clothing. Are these things that you expand, bring into the app at some point? You start selling electronics, et cetera? Or do you stay focused on grocery?
Look, grocery is a critical part of what we do. Certainly in the journey of creating an ecosystem of shop, there is opportunity to expand ranges. Definitely, clothing is a phenomenal business for us, right? Has done really, really well. Is doing really, really well. Is a very unique proposition in the market today, right? So, you know, it would be silly if we weren't, considering that. So definitely, and again, it talks about that stickiness and that creation of an ecosystem. You come in here and you just bought a grocery, a basket, here is free delivery on your clothing, which is also here, right? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you, right? The same probably with general merchandise up to a certain degree. Appliances, electronics. We do have appliances, we do have electronics to a certain degree, especially in our hypermarkets. Whether we'll become a marketplace.
Mm.
I'm not entirely sure. I think you could argue that's an evolution of it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
If that's where we would focus our attention on. I think it does need.
It's quite a different business model.
It does a different business model. Mm. I think it's. My view is that partnering in areas that is not your core areas is a much better way to grow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the things that Sean said when he came on is that this is not about just getting bigger than the others, this continuous obsession with someone outside.
Mm-hmm.
Stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You obsess about the customer, make her queen, and she will make you king. As Raymond used to say,
mm-hmm.
that's so we're not racing to be bigger. We're racing to be better. We're racing to be what customer want for us. Is not always the biggest that is the most profitable. Mm-hmm. Is the one with the highest price per share, right? So it's be focusing on the customer.
One thing I wanted to ask you was, what does this move to online mean for retailers' margins? Does it put them under pressure, or does online ordering have the potential actually to be a more profitable business for retailers?
Look, it's. I think there's a lot of misconception about profitability and margin, but I think it's an evolution, right? And I don't think that I think it's very often it because of where the Walmarts were coming from, invested very early in online, built up some infrastructure that were unprofitable for a long time, then I think that was probably the reality, right? Because in the US, people started from dark stores, right? Then it was like, this thing is unprofitable. It has been unprofitable for 15, 20 years, right? But I think we're finding when the two parts of the business work together, when you do in-store fulfillment, then you start seeing economies of scale. You start seeing the traction going. So it's not a source of concern for us.
Okay. Your thoughts on the subscription model? Takealot is doing it. Other grocery retailers started to launch subscription models. What are your thoughts on it?
I think that they are, again, another very good way to keep the customer in an ecosystem, which is really critical, as we said a few times. So definitely something we're looking into, something that is important to the customer. I think it's important to find the right economics to make it viable and to make it compelling. Right? The 17.
So watch the space, in other words.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
All right. Last question. We've seen some big international players enter this market, either directly or indirectly by selling offshore into South Africa through courier services. I'm thinking of fashion retailers like Shein and Temu. We've seen Amazon opening directly in the South African market, although it seems to have gone through very much of a soft launch here. So there is international competition coming into the market on the back of online deliveries. Do we see international grocery players entering this market? Do you expect the likes of Amazon to enter this market at some point? I mean, historically, this market has been South African retailers. To what extent are international players going to muscle in the coming years, do you think?
It's an interesting question, and So there's maybe two different parts of that, right? Would Amazon launch grocery? Amazon hasn't really been successful with grocery.
They bought Whole Foods Market a few years ago.
Yeah, but
I don't hear much about it.
If you buy Whole Foods Market and you don't put Coca-Cola in it, it's just not gonna work, right? Because it's you know how the Whole Foods range is a very is a very unique range to Whole Foods.
Right.
You won't find Cheetos. You won't find Coca-Cola.
It's more of a food lover's market type of product.
I think to the next extent, you'll find a Coke right there.
Oh, true.
So I think when you're Amazon, your customer base is a true representation of society. Mm. I think that Whole Foods doesn't necessarily fit. I don't think it was a good purchase. I think that they're struggling there. I think in UK they're doing it. The challenge is that, as we were saying earlier, as much as we are not in the business of large dark stores, Amazon is not in the business of small supermarkets that are close to the customer. Delivering cauliflower from 20 kilometers away, it's actually really hard.
And expensive.
It's hard and expensive, right? And you need to keep it refrigerated. There's multiple reasons why the store is a much better way to service the customer. That's kind of more of the online piece. On the offline piece, look, I think there was a lot of movement when Walmart bought Massmart many years ago. And there's a super interesting article where Whitey is interviewed.
Whitey Besson.
Yeah, it's because I think a Walmart wanted to buy Pick and Pay, and he managed to convince them to buy Massmart instead, which you should find it online. It's beautiful, right? Pure Whitey Besson stuff. I think that the market is quite evolved here. We have really strong retail brands.
So it's difficult to come in here. And I think that's an experience Amazon's actually had trying to take on Takealot.
Yeah.
Because it was an established brand here. And I guess, as you say, online grocery delivery is a difficult logistical business to get right.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think it's a lot easier for for Amazon to come in the country and try to challenge Takealot mm-hmm. than it would be for Carrefour to come into the country and challenge the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the barriers to entry are quite high. Yeah. And will get higher because you're going to build loyal customer bases and those barriers are going to get higher and higher.
I think so.
Yeah. Enrico, we could talk all day on this topic.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely fascinating, but I think we must end it at some point. So we'll do it there. I'm going to try and pronounce your name correctly. In fact, you pronounce your name so we can get the exact Italian pronunciation.
Sure. Enrico Ferigolli.
There we go. Enrico, your executive co-head. No, I've got the wrong title. Your title is?
Head of online.
Executive head of online at Pick and Pay. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tech Central show today.
Thank you for having me. It was a great discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.